This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi there, my name's Davina. I live in the UK in Cambridgeshire. I came across Over the Influence while scrolling through podcasts looking for a sober or alcohol-free. Just needed some inspiration, and I'm so glad I came across Ben and Shazza. We're due to meet up in June. There are about 30 of us from OTI, and we're going to be walking the Yorkshire Three Peaks. I can't wait to meet everybody in person. Yeah, connection is key. There are Zooms every week, weekly Zooms. Give it a go. You won't regret it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Over the Influence. We are, without doubt, the best alcohol-free podcast in all of the land, allegedly. We have now hit 100,000 downloads. Thank you so much for listening. It is quite incredible. In fact, it's quite incredible that we are all doing this. So if you are just joining us for the first time, a quick recap as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire. In the northwest of England, nobody calls me Sharon. Everyone calls me Shaz or Shazar. I used to be a daily drinker, ramped it up at weekends, probably drank for the best part of 30 years, something like that. And I've just hit 3 years alcohol-free, hands down, the best thing I have ever done in my life. Everybody's doing a little dance, if only you could see it on the camera. Life-changing shiz, let me tell you. I do not do this on my own. I am joined in the future by my very glamorous co-host, Freddie. Good morning, Freddie.
Good morning, Sharon Hartley. You are the expert at getting me up in the morning, and you really are. Sharon, baby, you're my firework, and today I am so excited. My fuse is lit, and stand well back because I might explode. I am so excited to be here. Hi, everyone. My name is Freddie. I am currently living in New Zealand. Almost 1,000 days ago, I was stressed, depressed, anxious, and very, very hungover. I decided to change my life. The magic started to happen, and the very best thing was starting this amazing podcast with you all. I am so excited. I am raring to go about our guest today. So let's get going.
Before we do, hold that thought. We need to introduce Background Ben. If you don't know, Background Ben started in the background. He was our podcast producer. He drank all the beers. No longer. He's very much in the foreground. Well, maybe not all the beers,
not
but
all
most
the beers.
Of them.
Yeah, a lot of beers.
A lot of the beers. Ben, just remind us where you're up to, because your story has resonated with thousands of people.
Which is lovely to hear. Yeah, my name's Ben. I am 33. I live in Liverpool. I started my career as a radio presenter and producer for Capital FM. Ended up running radio stations for Capital in the northwest of England. And when drinking through my 20s was something I did to enhance my good times. Unfortunately, I started to turn to drink because I was stressed more in my 30s. Decided to knock it on the head and originally said 3 months, give it a go, see what happens. Saw so many changes that quickly became 6, then 12, and I'm now 15 months alcohol-free.
Woo-hoo.
And I've just got back from a wedding in Canada, my second alcohol-free wedding. The wedding the weekend before gave me the strength to power through and go, yeah, I absolutely can do this. And in fact, at one point, there was a lovely moment where a girl came up and said, look, we're going to do shots. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't drink. She goes, I'm going to get you a shot of water so you can feel involved. And I was like, yeah.
I love that. I love her. Get her on the pod. Get her on.
Anyway, that's me.
I love
living alcohol-free life.
Jet Set Anderson went to Canada for the weekend, which is the kind of craziness you have when you're alcohol-free.
Ridiculous.
Enough about us. Yeah. Enough about us. So 3, 4, 5, 6 years sobriety between us three, which is nothing short of incredible. Let's bring in our guest today on the pod to add another year of sobriety, 7 years of sobriety. Now, I personally, because I'm a bit of a radio geek, and like you, Ben, I now work back in radio. When I finally secured today's guest, I was like, woohoo, a whooping and a hollering. Dean McCulloch, off of Actual Radio 1. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to Over the Influence. How are you, diddling?
I'm brilliant, guys. And I just love your energy around all of this because there's any bloody wonder so many people download this podcast because the three of you are absolutely bonkers. And it's a thrill. I'm not sure you're ready for another bonkers sober person tonight, but we're going to do it anyway. It's a thrill and I do feel the love in it and I feel that appreciation, Chaz. So thank you for reaching out and having me on. It's who doesn't love sitting around talking about our journeys through sobriety? And actually, it's not really about the booze, is it? It's all about what's going on inside. So I'm looking forward to chatting to you guys about that tonight.
You know, Dean, you touched on there about us three being bonkers and barking on about sobriety and all the rest of it. I've been following your social media and your posts, you know, when you started out on this alcohol-free journey. And I thought, Dean, right up our street, get him on the pod. I thought you would be perfect because you too are bonkers and you too sing about sobriety. Simple as that. So you are right up our street.
Yes, it's weird because, you know, you don't really think when you start a journey like being sober that you're ever gonna inspire other people. It's weird because you're doing it for a multitude of reasons, but to change other people's lives and to change other people's perceptions isn't the first thing that you think of. I think that is really one of the most remarkable things about being sober, actually, is that the amount of people that have reached out to me that have been inspired by my story has spurred me on. So every message that I've got, every comment, every tweet, every email, every text, every phone call from people that I know and people that I don't know that have said, you've inspired me. I'm like, how? You know, what is it that I've done? And they're like, well, you know, to see you doing this and to see you living your best life makes me want to do it. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And then that thought sticks with you. And actually on those days where you think, oh God, should I have a drink? Or, you know, should I go out and get on it? It's like, well, no, because I'm actually inspiring other people and I'm inspiring myself. So I'm going to stay sober and I'm not going to have a drink. But I have to be honest with you, but from the offset, I've not found it that hard. I've been okay. It's not been tricky. But what I will say, being now, I think it's been, when did I give up? 1st of September last year. So like, what's that? Like 13 months ago or something like that. As the months, people probably don't want to hear this, but as the longer you go, I actually think that the prangs, the cravings get a little bit harder. Your ego, the voice in your head tries to find different languages to talk to you. And you just have to be stronger to recognize those languages because they come in the most bizarre and very, very strange and peculiar ways and peculiar times of day. But on the whole, it's been quite easy. And I'm going to be honest about that because I don't want anybody listening to think that it's really hard. It can be hard for some people, but it hasn't been really hard for me.
I think that's such an interesting point of view, Dean. And in a minute, it'd be great to go back to the start and find out more about your drinking journey. But I think it's amazing that you say it hasn't been that hard, especially with the environment that you work in, you know, being in. And this is what I love talking to you, to being in that radio industry, in the entertainment industry. I'm going to show my age now because I was taken back to the year 1999. And just imagine, if you will, a young, fresh-faced Freddie was putting on his baggy white jeans and his see-through mesh vest. And I was getting ready to go to Gatecrasher. And as a 17-year-old, I had Radio 1 on in the background. I had Judge Jules on the Hallowed ones and twos, banging out my trance music. There was Pete Tong coming in. I was getting my glow sticks ready. I was oiling my chest before I went into these nightclubs, knocking back vodka like no tomorrow. And this was what life was like for, and this was before I had a drink problem, to be honest. This is when I was doing normal drinking. And still got the see-through vest, by the way. It's a little bit tighter now, but that's another story. And what I'm trying to get to, Dean, is that you work in an industry that is traditionally quite, surrounded by temptation, by drink, potentially on the fringes of your industry, potentially drugs as well. And that must be difficult. Have you found that there is been temptations around you, or have you just powered through and stayed true on that journey?
It was the 1st of September 2020, and I think anybody listening now will remember how dark, strange and peculiar that time was for all of us. It was a time where we really, really didn't know what was going on with the pandemic. You know, we'd hit that first big crescendo of hell for the first bit of the summer, and then as the colder, darker winter months were coming in, we thought, shit, we really, really, really are in a pandemic now. And we're not quite sure how we're going to get out of it. So I actually didn't have the same temptations that other people will have that are starting their sober journey in normal times. And I know that there are some people who were going through really serious drink and drug problems during the pandemic that remember hitting that winter last year and thinking, I need to make some different choices here. You know, I know people who really hit the bottle, and I know other people who really assessed their drinking situation. And I was one of those people. And I went, I didn't have Christmas parties. I didn't have awards dues or any of that like showbiz faff that goes on. I didn't have any of that. So I was okay. And I was going out for like drinks with a couple of friends, dinner with a couple of friends. And I was really quite proud of myself whenever I would get a taxi home, or I would walk home, or I would drive home, and I would wake up the next day and I would be like, this is interesting. I didn't drink last night, even though I was in a bar. I was with my friends who were drinking and we had the most amazing time, and I'm not waking up with a hangover today. And that becomes the new addiction. That fresh mind, that like clarity that you get, becomes the new thing to reach for that replaces the bottle of Malbec that you would normally drink on a cold winter's night. So no, I didn't have those things, but I have them now. And that's what I'm really having to try and wrap my head around, because I started at Radio 1 in December. I only really got my own show there in, I found out like July, August time, and I started at the beginning of September this year. So it's been quite the 12 months, and there's been loads of time, loads of room to celebrate. You know, there's been pride events, festivals. I've been out hosting live events again. And, you know, it's like, what do you want to drink? And I'm like, oh, Red Bull, please. You know, and that doesn't even feel different to me. It doesn't even feel weird me saying that. It's just like, this is my new life now. And I really, really, truly believe it's underpinned by what I wanted in the first instance, which was my dream job. I wanted clarity. I got it. I wanted to save some money. I did that. And I wanted my dream job, and I got that. So if you look at it really just pragmatically, and also I think that's why it's important for people who want to be sober to have a goal. Because when that goal comes along, that is your goal that you have got with your sober mind, with your sober heart and your sober head. And that's yours to hold on to with both hands, which can be anything. It could be moving house. It could be a new relationship. It could be getting rid of an ex. It could be whatever you want it to be. If drinking drugs isn't part of that narrative, it's your new life that belongs to you. So I don't ever feel like, so I don't know Radio 1 going to the Brit Awards and getting smashed. I don't know that. But I know that whenever I do eventually go to the Brit Awards, I can go and have a really brilliant time, and I can really go and enjoy that. And if I get invited to like a label party, or, you know, I'm going to like the Attitude Awards tomorrow night and there's drink everywhere, I just don't need to drink it, because my life now as me, the Radio 1 presenter, which is what I always, always wanted to be, which I got, is worth far more than having a pint. So I can't even compute it. It's like my brain doesn't even recognize it. Like, oh, but wouldn't this be better, Dean, if you're DJing here? Like I was DJing in Ibiza last week. Oh, wouldn't this be better if you were drinking alcohol? It's like, no, of course not, because that's not what we wanted. And therefore, that's not what's going to happen. So, you know, to relate that to anybody who's going, well, you know, I don't want to be a Radio 1 presenter. If we really think about it in just normal terms, if you imagine the life that you want, which is a life of clarity and a life full of love and abundance and happiness, and if you do what you need to do, whether it's completely stopping drinking, whether it's just thinking about your drinking behavior, when you start to get that, when you start to see that light, whatever that light is, and you're drawn to that light, it's really quite a beautiful moment.
I have to jump in there quickly, but I am literally losing limbs from that wisdom grenade that you've just thrown in there. I am blown away. I think that was so, so spot on, because I totally agree. And what I say to so many people, and this is what I failed to stop drinking 1,000 times, because so many people, myself included, had this pattern where you get drunk, you do something silly, you wake up and you think, I guess I shouldn't really drink anymore. And then you try and make about willpower and it never works. And anyone that says, yeah, drinking's not great, is it? I guess I'll probably stop for a little bit. It rarely, rarely, rarely works, because you're totally right. And I think the way it can be easier for people is when you say to yourself, I want that new life. And it might be the job or the relationship or the house or the holiday or the body or whatever it is. But you have to want that thing more than you want to pick up that drink. And I think once you can make that switch, then it does make it so much easier and more clearer, as you say, with thinking, what is that life that I want? And then I'm going to go and get it. And that's exactly what I think. And I know that some days I really bloody want a drink still. But this journey that I'm on, this life that I'm trying to get, I want that more. And I know that if I want that, then I can't have this. And yeah, I totally agree. So thank you for that amazing wisdom.
I just want to ask you, why is it that you want to have a drink? So those days where you think, I really bloody want a drink, what is it? What is that?
Oh, now that is a good question. If I'm honest, I still miss it sometimes. And I've said it on previous podcasts. I used to bloody love drinking and getting messed up. I love the buzz. I love the feeling. I love the confidence. And I know all of it is false. And I know that the payoff is not worth the price it costs. But I, the sort of person that I am, that kind of all or nothing type, I sometimes seek the chaos. I sometimes fantasize about the oblivion. And some days I still want that. But then I think to myself, if I go down that path, then I have to step away from this path. And that's why I always make the decision to drink differently and say no to that drink. But yeah, it's always a battle for me. And as I say, I've people like Shazza, Ben, probably yourself, I know you're all really good at saying you're never going to drink again. And even coming up to 1,000 days, I still haven't got there yet. And I know I'm not going to drink anytime soon. But I always say, once I hit my business goals, my financial goals, my career goals, my physical goals, then maybe I will have a drink. But until that day, and those goals are pretty big that I've got. So for now, I just have to keep on living that sober dream.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what happened to me when it was the 2 weeks leading up to my 1 year. And I had finished the breakfast show on the old station that I worked at. I had money in the bank. I had my Radio 1 contract on the way. I had absolute peace and clarity and focus. I'd got everything I wanted. And it was like sort of end of August is a really, really busy year. Busy time of year for me. There's normally loads of events on. It's like Manchester Pride, which is a real staple in the calendar because I live in Manchester, and it's always centered around boozing, you know. It's like spring break for me, you know, because everything's winding down and you're just ready to get on it. And my mind worked in the most fucked up ways to tell me that it was time for me to start drinking again. Like, it really, really snuck in. I was actually on a tube. This one really got me. I was on the Victoria line and I was going from Vauxhall to Oxford Circus. I actually think I might have been going to Radio 1. I remember doing that journey on the tube because I used to live in Stockwell. I remember being on that tube that day, and it sort of triggered the memory, really, really chaotic, delusional state of delirium thing that you were talking about, Freddie. That just fuzzy place of not quite knowing what is going on. It triggered that because I used to go to parties in Chelsea, in Vauxhall, in Stockwell, and I would always get the tube home first thing in the morning, or I would get an Uber if I was really messed up. But and I was on that same tube, and it was like 6 o'clock in the day, and my brain kicked in and went, go and get a bottle of Prosecco. You deserve a bottle of Prosecco. Ooh, you should have a bottle of Prosecco. And I went, what the fuck was that? What the fuck was that? Like, where did that come from? It didn't come from me. And this is what people need to realize. These thoughts that come into your head that say, Freddie, you need a drink. You need a drink. Oh, you need a drink, Freddie. Freddie, have a drink. Oh, you deserve a drink. Whatever that voice sounds like in your head, it's just a voice. It's not real. You don't want it. You don't need it. But it comes in the most strangest kind of ways. And I think being in Soho and stuff as well, because they were just my craziest years. I'm like, I remember that. I remember sitting there. I remember standing there. I remember doing God knows what up that alleyway. Doing that and doing that and doing that. And see, instead of me being repulsed by that and like ashamed of that and regretting that, I wear it like a badge of honor. I'm like, you go, Glen Coco. You had the best years ever getting on that Victoria line from a party in Victoria and going back to Vauxhall to lie in your pit for 2 days after going on a bender. Like, good for you. That's, guess what? That's what you do when you're in your 20s. That's what you do when you have the world at your feet. And, you know, you're parading around Soho thinking you own the place, in and out of there, kissing boys, doing whatever. You've got to own that. That's what you did, and that's what led you up into this point. And I use it now as a sense of, like, I do not need that bottle of Prosecco. I am smashing life. I'm loving life. I'm having a brilliant time. But I'm going to push through these next couple of weeks, which was leading up to my 1 year. I'm going to push through this because I'm going to feel even better at the end of it. I don't need the drink to make, to reward myself for being 1 year sober, reward myself for getting a job at Radio 1. I just need to celebrate it in absolute clarity. And I did. But don't get me wrong, that was really, really hard. Really hard because year on year on year on year, that's what we did. August Bank Holiday, get on it. Everyone does, don't they? It's such a moment for everybody, no matter where you're from in this country. It's like something's going on. And I just find it absolutely remarkable. Then it got to like 1 year. I was in Belfast and I was like, nailed it. I felt so smug. That sober smug feeling is like, it's so much better than the other voice. The other voice that says, oi, dickhead, go and get yourself a beer. Like, the voice that says, yas, queen, you did it, is so much better. Now that is an insight to what goes on in my head.
Heard of AVRT, Dean? There's a big radio presenter up here in Liverpool, Lee Butler. I'm not sure if you've come across Lee on your travels before. Lee was Radio City for years, also kind of massive on the dance scene. Liverpool loves the parties, I'm sure you know. And he, for years and years, was going out, drinking, doing everything, every weekend. And he talks about AVRT, the addictive voice recognition technique. And he's helping thousands of people in the Northwest, well, across the country now, but started here in the Northwest now. There's a lot more kind of thought and awareness going into that voice isn't you. That voice is something else. And I love how you said that there, is that how you used the phrase earlier that it finds different languages to speak to you in. And it's so true. It's not you. It's something completely different. Just before we move on, I really want to go back to you getting the gig at Radio 1, because you've grafted, you've done everything you need to do to get to the point where you are in terms of the early mornings, the late nights, the taking the shifts here, the free work experience there, the this, that and the other. surely you would have always got that gig at Radio 1, even if you decided not to give up the booze. You're a personable, warm, funny broadcaster. Surely it was always going to be yours, whether you were drinking or not.
You know, it's such a good question. I've never really thought about it like that before, to be honest. To be honest with you, I don't know. But what I am certain of is that I actually feel a bit emotional thinking about it now, because I probably would have got the job at Radio 1, because I know me really well, and I would have just beat that door down, and I would have applied like everybody else did last year, and I probably would have got it. And it is because of the hard work that I've put in that I'm only really realizing now, because looking back at, you know, it's not just the grafting that you do to bring you to this point as a broadcaster. It's the world that you need to see and you need to experience in order to be able to sit in a studio and talk to millions of people every day. You need to have some experience. And I have experience. I've seen the world. And like, for the record, like, I was not a messy, drunken person. I really did. I would say first lockdown was like probably the most I've ever drank. And it was maybe like 2-3 bottles of wine. Prosecco. I remember one day drinking like half a bottle of vodka, and I was like, I've never done that in my life. So it was just a warning sign. But the point is that now that I'm at Radio 1, I just know that I owed it to myself to be the best broadcaster that I can possibly be, because of the little boy who went to dance classes in Belfast, because of the little boy who got bullied so badly for having too much to say, for the little boy that could never ever say the words I'm gay, the little boy who was told to shut up all the time because I just was too much. You're too much, you've too much to say, you're this, you're that, you're this, you're that, and blamed constantly for just being me. So I wouldn't be doing that boy justice if I then got the job of all jobs on the station of all stations and then spent my days being hungover and anxious and worried, and also putting myself in a situation where I could have that all ripped from my hands in a split second, and I would never ever work again. I'm talking about being at after parties, sleeping with people selling stories. All of those things that have happened to so many people that I know that have worked just as hard as I have. Why would I put all of that work in and go through all of that to be given the job of a lifetime and then mess it up by having one too many beers on the weekend? It's just not worth it. And that really, really, really is the main reason why I don't drink anymore.
Oh, I just love your story. And I mean, you know, compared to you, Dean, at late 20s, I'm not so far off twice your age, but so much of what you say resonates about the clarity and working your ass off. And if somebody's listening to this pod for the first time, I won't give you my entire backstory, but to cut a very long story short, I'm 47, used to work in commercial radio in my 20s, and that's when I would literally go to the opening of an envelope, Dean, because there would be free shots, free everything. You know, that's when it started. Fast forward 20 odd years now to 47 and 3 years alcohol free. In the last 2 years, we've lost a family business. I was serving coffee in booths, wearing a name badge and special safety shoes 2 years ago. But my dream was to get back in radio, And people said, do it. It's what you're born to do. You must do it. And you're like, okay. And as you were saying, the clarity and the balls it gives you, and it makes you brave. And I just thought, okay, what's the worst that could happen? And now, like you, I'm doing my absolute dream job at BBC Radio Lancashire, not too far from you, just a little bit further up the road. You know, my kids call me Sharon Partridge. I don't care.
No, I never knew that. That's going to stick.
Oh, you're back at the BBC, Shazza.
And I adore it. And Dean, I'm really excited for you because you're 12, 13 months alcohol free now. Jesus Christ, what you're gonna go? It's gonna be stratospheric. The world is your oyster because you're only 29, and I'm really excited for you. And I feel like a very proud auntie.
Yeah.
We're Sound Rebel, and we just wanted to let you know a bit more about us.
Sound Rebel produced this podcast, and we work with all sorts of personalities to help them engage with their current audiences.
We work with actors, football commentators, comedians, personal trainers, radio presenters, hello, influencers, and even world record holders.
So, if you've got an audience but don't have a podcast, get in touch with us.
Oh, and tell us you heard this ad and we'll produce your first episode for free.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now and take your place in the fastest growing broadcast medium in the world.
Right, back to the episode.
You stopped drinking and you had these career defining opportunities, these dream jobs coming to you. But I was also thinking of other people that get their dream jobs, their dream opportunities, and oh yeah, they go to a place they've always wanted to go, or they finally get that relationship, but then they mess it up. And Dean, you spoke about it a bit, and I think we all know of people in the entertainment industry and yeah, things like sports people as well. And you say, how have they done that? They had all the opportunity in front of them. They had the world at their feet, and they didn't go down the right path. They decided to get involved in the scandal or the drink or the drugs or whatever it is. And I guess it's an open question for all of you in those sorts of industries. Why do you think people do that? And is it just that, do people have that self-destruct button? Do they think that they're not good enough for having their dreams come true? Like, why do you think it happens?
Look, people who work in the public eye are just people. They are just people. It's like somebody losing their job in a supermarket for doing something silly. It just happens to be that you're in front of millions of people. And I think that's something that you sign up for when you decide to work in the entertainment industry or in any industry that's public facing. So it comes with a territory. Now, do I believe that people need to be torn down for these mistakes? Not really. Do they need to be made an example of? Not really. Do they need to be held accountable? Yeah, they do. Because you need to realize that when you take on a job as a sports personality, that there are millions of people coming behind you that want to run in your shoes, and you by default are there to represent those people, whether you like it or not. If you don't like it, don't do it. So the choices that you make, good and bad, have repercussions for yourself and for all of those people behind you. So you need to bear that in mind. Now, does that mean that you can't make mistakes? No. In fact, if you make a mistake, it's a good thing because it shows that you're fucking human and that everybody makes mistakes. And if you are lucky enough to get another chance, brilliant. Grab it with the balls. And we've seen so many celebrities and sports people and people in power, politicians, getting another chance and turning it around. It's when you keep making those mistakes and keep pressing that self-destruct mode that we've got a problem. And by we, I mean you. And you probably need to step away from the limelight and you need to go and work on yourself because you've still got work to do. And the reason why you need to step away from the limelight is because you're no longer a role model, because that's not the way. Ending up in the Priory is not sexy. Failing a drugs test is not sexy. Being a politician and getting caught with drugs, it's just not sexy. It's not good. You can call it rock star, you can call it whatever you want, but you've got to think of the people that are watching, and you've got to remember that it's part of your duty of care to your fans, to your followers, to yourself and your family, to if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, but let's not keep making that mistake, because now you're just being careless with your actions. And I suppose that, you know, by me not drink, I mean, I'm very, very much at the beginning of my journey here in my next part of my career. I'm well aware of that. But I've been in situations before. I've worked, done a couple of different TV shows, and I've been around long enough, and I've made mistakes, made enemies, done all of those things. But I've almost done them in private, if that makes sense. So I can see when those issues are arriving. I can see when I'm working with people that I probably shouldn't be, or I'm in a situation where I probably shouldn't be, and I can see those situations. But for folks who again don't work in the industry, or they've just maybe found themselves, because these things happen, you know, you do just, people say, oh, you don't just find yourself in a situation. Well, actually you do. It's okay to be in those situations. It's okay to make those mistakes. But how you turn that around, you need to not beat yourself up first, because there are probably people that want to tear you down quicker. So if you can find that space in your own self and say, right, we're going to sort this out now, it will be easier, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely does. And I'm reminded of a quote that I read, that I'm now absolutely going to butcher, I'm sure. But I read it a few days ago, and it was something like, life will keep on presenting the same lessons to us until we learn those lessons. And examples would be, and I've had friends like this, they've tried to get away from drugs and the party lifestyle. So they've moved cities, or sometimes moved countries. And then, lo and behold, I get speaking to, the one guy in the bar who's a drug dealer happens to start talking to me, or people that are always getting into the same type of relationship, and they get out of the relationship and then get with exactly the same type of person. And that was something that I learned, especially that life will keep on presenting these same patterns to us until we learn to do something differently. And yes, I always like to say, I think it might have been Gary Vee or someone who said it first, but if you want the things you never had before, then you need to do the things you've never done before, which means changing your behaviours, saying no when you usually say yes to things, just doing things differently. And that's how we learn those lessons. And that's how we get on that path to make those dreams come true.
Yeah. And as I said at the beginning, it's not about the alcohol. And I really, really, really want people who are listening to this right now to just think about that for a second. If you think that you've got a drink problem, the chances are that it's got absolutely nothing to do with alcohol. Who even likes the taste of alcohol?
I only drank to get drunk, not because a bottle of rosé tasted nice. I smell it now, Dean, and I start yipping.
Yeah. And it's not about the alcohol itself. Generally, there's something going on deeper, and we're just masking and masking and masking and masking. And again, that's okay. There's no problem with that. People never face up to their demons, or people never really want to go down that road, and that's okay. But for the majority of people that say, I don't really like drinking, I just like to get out of my head, that's such a common thing. But it's not about the alcohol. We just use the alcohol. But I love shots. Why do you like shots? Because they make me get drunk quicker. Oh, so you're injecting yourself out of that seat into that state of oblivion because it's quicker. It's not because you like the taste of Sambuca or you really just love 17 Jager bombs. It's because you just want to get out of your head quicker, And again, there's no judgment. There's no fucking judgment. We all did it. We've all been there. But generally, underneath that glass of rosé, there's a whole well of shit that you just need to deal with.
Speaking of Jager bombs, Dean, I was delighted.
Are you gonna give me one?
We were getting you one.
Are you gonna give me a Jager bomb?
never. But I was delighted when we knew that you were coming on the podcast, not only because obviously love the show on Radio 1, but because you are a 29-year-old man. How was Ibiza sober?
Amazing. It was incredible. Yeah. It was my fifth time in Ibiza. And actually, my Ibiza stories are chaos, like way too chaotic for this podcast. Sorry, guys.
Oh, Dean!
No, I actually, the very first time I ever went to Ibiza, I was sat in my living room in Manchester with my friend, and I was supposed to be at an ayahuasca ceremony in London, but it got cancelled. I was like, what am I supposed to do with my weekend now? So I made a stir fry for me and my housemate, and my two best mates, who had still gone to Ibiza, FaceTimed me from Cafe Mambo and said, oh, we love you, Bob Marley's playing. Oh, I was like, oh, boys, I just wish I was there. And they were like, aren't you supposed to be somewhere? I was like, yeah, but it got cancelled. Pregnant pause. They went, get yourself to the airport. I went, oh my God, shall I? They were like, yeah. So I went, literally downed the bottle of wine I was drinking to take the edge off of the excitement of the holiday. And I booked the flight and I got straight to the airport and I woke up in Ibiza and was like, how the fuck did I get here? And then we went out all day, went to Amnesia that night. I hugged a speaker and cried because I was so overwhelmed. And then carried on the whole next day and came home and was like, where even was I? Like, I couldn't really even tell you what Ibiza actually looked like because it was just dancing, partying, fun, excitement. Same again, I went for a hen. Then I went for my birthday. Then I went again. But I love Ibiza. Like, I really, really fell in love with the island. I fell in love with the people, the lifestyle, everything about Ibiza. And people think that it's just this party island full of pills and techno. It's not. It can be if you want to be, but it's not. It's actually really spiritual and it's in a really, really beautiful part of the world, energetically and spiritually as well. So I really resonated with that. And so this time going back, I was absolutely fucking petrified because I was like, what do I do when I get into my hotel? Like, what do I do? Like, do I need to, like, if I'm not going to go and buy bottles of vodka, like, what am I going to buy? Like, what the fuck? So I just was scrambling for all these answers. But I tell you what, I was like, I just had these superpowers. I was like, I've worked so hard for this holiday. I really deserve to go away and have a good time. And I were better to dance your tits off than round a pool in Ibiza. And I love music. I just absolutely categorically love it. I love all kinds of music, but obviously in Ibiza, dance music, gorgeous chilled Ibiza anthems, all of that just music that just wraps around you and just makes you feel good and heals your soul, which is what I needed. I got, and I did it all sober. And I was like asking for alcohol-free beers. I was drinking, it was like a strawberry daiquiri, but instead of the vodka, I was putting Red Bull in it. I don't know, it's some sort of weird sober hack. I don't, like, honestly, guys, try it because you get, like, you get that buzz, but you still feel like you're drinking a cocktail. So basically, in a nutshell, I was making it my own. I made so many friends. I did everything that I would normally do in Ibiza, like, just be crazy. just being crazy. Like, we just hardly slept. Like, I think I'm so exhausted even now, and it was a week ago. Like, we hardly slept. We got to bed at, like, 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning, which is what I would have done anyway. But I, instead of, you know, that dread of like waking up with a hangover or just feeling so worse for wear, it was replaced with really beautiful breakfasts, really gorgeous. We went to this really expensive restaurant and instead of spending loads of money on stupid bottles of vodka, we treated ourselves to this gorgeous meal and really made an event of it. So I know for loads of people, going on holiday and being alcohol free is really tricky. Like, who doesn't love a nice little glass of sangria sat on the balcony? That is pure and utter bliss. Dipping your crisps into your alioli, oh my god. But you need to do those things. So you need to do everything that you would normally do, but just swap your alcohol out for different things. And if you feel like you need to splurge on something to just feel a bit reckless, because I know, Freddie, you just want that chaos, take your bank card and go and treat yourself to a really beautiful meal and really make something of it. Dress up, really go and spend hours eating that food, tasting that food, experiencing it. And because what you're doing to your brain is you're just filling it full of enjoyment and serotonin. And then guess what, guys? You don't need alcohol because you're already fucking happy. Like, it's a real life hack. And I just had the best time. I was dancing like a twat. And the great thing is I was doing a DJ set and my friends loved me because I just got there and they'd put this big bottle of Grey Goose down. And then they were like, oh shit, Dean, yeah, oh, you don't drink. My best friend was like, I'll have that. And I was just like bringing people over to the table. I'm like, help yourself. I was like, apparently this is on my rider. So it's great if you go away and you still get free drinks for whatever reason. Like, if you win a karaoke competition, they bring you over a couple of beers, keep them, use it as currency if you want to get yourself a wee shag or make some friends around the pool, give it to them. Never say no to free drink. You can use it in other ways.
I mean, I was going to say, look, I totally agree. And it's so funny you say that, Dean, because I, despite the years now of sobriety, I still see, you know, two places, Ibiza and Vegas, as kind of like my my nemesis, if that's a plural word. And I almost went to Ibiza for a stag do just before COVID kicked off, and then it got cancelled. And I was secretly quite happy because I was worried about that one. But you're totally right. It's about going there and absolutely owning it. And I do 100% agree with what you say. It's not just a party island. It is a magical island. And I thought that on that very first morning when I woke up there as a, this is like a memory lane for me now as a fresh faced 24-year-old or whatever I was. And but then I always think about that plane home. And in fact, I can't tell you about the plane home because I missed my first plane home on my my first Ibiza trip and had to come back a couple of days later. But it's true. And I think if we can find that chaos, if that is what we seek in different ways, and focus on how we can make it the best damn trip, the best memories, the best holiday, because I love my times on those holidays and in other places around the world. But I'm 100% sure that if we can find the sober wins and the sober goodness, then that is when we can really create those memories. And then you can have that flight home feeling amazing and feeling proud of yourself and not just shivering in a corner with your face pressed up against the window, just thinking your life's going to end.
It's so true. It's so true. But I really understand that's not the same for everybody. There are people who depend on alcohol. There are people who have got social anxiety that wouldn't dream of going to a beach club in a bikini because they, without having some booze beforehand. I get it. I totally get it. And it might take you a couple of attempts to go on those girls' trips or those weekends away for you to really, really almost wean yourself off it if you need to, or just put yourself in that situation and go, right, now I'm going to make the decision. Rather than putting all that pressure on yourself and saying, oh, I'm not going to drink when I go away with the girls, or I'm not going to drink when I go away with the boys, and then you do and you fucking hate yourself and the holiday was a waste of time. Don't do that to yourself. That's such a trap. Don't hold that gun to your head. And guess what? If you go and you drink one of the days out of five, fine. Like, great. You've done it. Like, go for a lovely, like, balance. It's all about balance. You might not need to give up alcohol. That's what I always say. People say, oh, you need to give up alcohol to achieve your dreams. Do you? Fuck, you don't. You just need to understand what your relationship with alcohol is. Wouldn't you agree?
I really definitely like that. And we do sing about sobriety on this podcast, and the three of us, you know, are completely alcohol free. But we always say, look, if you want to drink, if that's your bag, crack on. But for us and our journeys and our stories and our goals, it's no coincidence that it's going quite well. And guess what? We just removed one thing. So yeah, each to their own, Dean. Absolutely. We'll never sort of finger wag and go, oh, shame on you for drinking. People have to find their own way and work out, you know, what works for them. But it has been, this has been just joyous chatting to you on the pod. And I knew it would be. I absolutely knew it would be. I've just been looking back at your posting that you shared on Instagram to mark your 1 year alcohol-free, which, as you said, was in September. And basically, you said here, I feel the most me I have ever done. And to me, that sums up sobriety. So thank you for being the most you with Over the Influence. It's just been, it's been glorious, Dean.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's all these moments that I cherish, because I would never get to talk to people like you if I didn't, you know, if I was still drinking, and I wouldn't be able to be here and be 100% present, you know. And that's kind of the thought that I want to leave with you today and with folk that are listening, is that, you know, it's all about being present and living in the moment. You only get really one shot at this life. And if you want to drink here and there on special occasions, or if you want to completely give up, or if you want to drink forever, that's your journey. It's your story. And no one's judging. No one cares. That's the thing about being sober as well. You think, oh, people are going to judge me if I fall off the wagon after 6 months or 1,000 days. They're not. The sober community is there for you. And, you know, you've got a podcast like this that's always going to be there and judgment free. And you've got friends around you that should really support you regardless of the journeys that you make. But as long as you can just promise yourself, what I will preach is that you must always, always, always be present and just appreciate all of these lovely special moments like we've shared tonight. Otherwise, what's the point? So whether it's with drink or without drink, just be in the moment and just really, really enjoy it. And that's that's really what I cherish every day going into work at Radio 1, because I'm like, oh, I really do feel like I'm really, really here. My brain's not still stuck in the club, or my brain's not regretting what I did last night. I'm here and I'm proud to be here. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for having me here. It's been just so fun. The three of you really are bonkers.
Hey, listen, dude, at least you don't get called bloody Sharon Partridge.
I've been called worse, trust me.
Very quickly, before you go, just remind our listener when they can listen to you on Radio 1 when they're not listening to Over the Influence.
For some light
that relief. Was so Sharon Partridge, that was.
Knob off!
Yeah, you can listen to me every Friday, Saturday, Sunday from 10:30 till 1 on Radio 1. And what's brilliant is that your lovely friend here in the radio is never going to be hungover.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you. Meet Kate.
A few words to describe Over the Influence. Funny, fabulous, informative, supportive, and I think the most important one for me, community. I will be a year alcohol-free in September, and it's the best thing I've ever done. And I think Over the Influence has been one of my biggest tools in my toolkit for if I'm having a wobble, or if I just need just that little nudge, that little bit of support. I would highly, highly recommend it.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk and be part of the Sober Rebellion.